You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto and we are glad you're joining us here this... I can't say fine day anymore. What happened to fine days, Art?
Fine days turned into October.
Fine days ended before October. We just kept hoping they'd sneak back in.
Yeah, we were hoping for a couple weeks of summer.
A September to remember. And we didn't get a September to remember.
No, we've got early Christmas.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Wet and rainy in Vancouver. So, Art Factor, how are you doing, sir?
I'm well. I've got all these new toys.
You got new toys? We have a spectacular show today. I am so excited. We're going to be talking. The Globe and Mail did an outstanding expose on what went wrong at BlackBerry, and we're going to be talking with them about that. That's just a fascinating story that they did this weekend.
The story's not just one sentence. BlackBerry was not Apple. Is that
you have no idea? I mean, you kids today, you don't know how important BlackBerry was. BlackBerry set the standard. BlackBerry changed the mobility world forever.
And then Apple changed it again and left BlackBerry in the dust.
Apple changed some things, yeah. But Apple never would have had their success had not BlackBerry done what BlackBerry had done. We forget these things very easily.
Yeah, but it's like saying that Nintendo changed video games.
I don't hear people saying, Crosby's the greatest ever because, Gretzky, he did it then, but he's old now. He can't do it anymore. BlackBerry had their day, and the benefit of what they brought along to the technology space is going to be felt for a long time to come. A lot of technology is built on their shoulders.
Yeah, and 10 years from now, people will be Apple who? Because some new fancy
maybe.
Company will.
And maybe the reason they're going to say Apple who is our second guest is we're going to be talking to Samsung about their new smartwatch, their Samsung Galaxy Gear, the smartwatch. I went and saw it on Monday morning.
I saw your picture.
Did you? I posted. Beeler was there, because Beeler's everywhere. Beeler was there, and he was comparing it to his Pebble watch and all that sort of stuff. And he was. But the smartwatch, I'm not as excited about it. I actually love their new mega cell phone. It's called the Samsung Note 3. I'm smitten by it. I'm slightly smitten by it.
When they say mega, does that mean it's the you have to hold
it's
it
like
in two hands?
It's like a 5.7-inch cell phone. It's a cell phone that's the size of, those new Fiat 500s? It's the same size. Exact same size.
So you need
as a Fiat 500.
You need at least a two-seater to move your cell phone around with you.
Yeah, but it's way cooler than the car. Because you can do something. It's a big cell phone. It's a mega-sized cell phone. And then we've got Chris Hobbs joining us. Vancouver-based company Two Tall Totems. They did a Kickstarter launch. They tried. They were one of the first Canadian companies to launch a Kickstarter campaign to raise funds. So I'm going to ask you how it went.
Speaking of Kickstarter, did you read the story about the guy in Saskatchewan, I believe, who wanted to create an affordable 3D, speaking of Beeler too, a 3D printer?
No.
He threw on a Kickstarter, and he thought that he could raise something like $150,000 to start this plan, and within a week he was up to something like $300,000.
Shut up.
Yeah. So I guess
you buy one?
I did not go in. I read the story and I thought that's interesting. I guess the 3D printing is taking off. Beeler started something.
3D printing is pretty cool. 3D printing is cool, and I don't think Beeler started it. I think he might want to take credit for it, but I don't think he completely started it. But it is pretty cool technology. I'm not buying one.
I'm just saying Kickstarter works for some people.
I just bought a new laser printer for the house.
Oh.
I finally got sick and tired of inkjet printers. And as much as I like inkjets, they're fine. But we use our printer so seldom that every time I go to use the printer, the ink is like dried up. It doesn't work anymore. So I have to go buy a whole new set of ink cartridges. Now, all our good friends at London Drugs love me popping in, every 3 months and buying a brand new set of ink cartridges that I'm going to print 8 pages with. The economy didn't work for me. So I bought a laser printer, a Brother laser printer, and installed it at home this way last weekend.
And what's the review?
it does a pretty good job. It's wireless, and so it's really easy for all the members of the family to print. And, you know, the thing about toner is it's pretty stable. So, you know, if we don't print anything for 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 months, we don't have to, you know, we know that the printer's going to print when we're done. And the toner cartridges hold a massive, you know, we can print 1,500 pages with one toner charge, you know. And now the toner is more expensive than ink, but it's not that much more. And the cost per page is very affordable. And we don't have as much waste because we just don't, you know, the ink doesn't dry up.
See, unfortunately,
I just realized how boring that must be for everybody driving home.
Well, because everyone driving home is coming from a real job where they get to print all their private stuff at work and save money and never
is that
have,
what you do?
I've never bought a printer in my life.
So, but you print here.
Oh, absolutely. I write some, hopefully the boss isn't listening, but yeah, absolutely. I'll write down my jokes for tonight's show, my rundown of what I'm going to talk about on the show, and then print it up, put it in my pocket, good to go.
Well, before we go too far, we should make our big announcement because you and I, we have some changes are coming.
We do.
What's the changes?
Well, at this time slot at 6 p.m. every Wednesday is going to a new owner's coming into our spot, and we're getting moved because we're going to be part of an interesting wine technology evening on Thursday nights. Dotto Tech is moving to 7 p.m. Thursdays.
So after 124 shows in the Wednesday night time slot, we're moving to 7 p.m. on Thursday.
Hey, if you remember NBC, that was much watched TV. That was the Seinfeld slot.
It was?
Yes.
So we're good. So we'll pick up that whole audience.
We're
that's
moving
been waiting.
On up. We're moving on. We're like up Sherman Helmsley.
Sure. So actually, I don't mind this because we do back on to now. We just come out of music now, and often it's really irritating music that I'm coming out of. But now,
don't say that.
I shouldn't say that. What are they going to do? Move me later? So now we get to back on what I think is one of the top two or three shows on this station, which is the Food and Wine Show, which is simply an awesome product.
Well, who doesn't love food, wine? I mean, it's perfect. They saw you, Steve, and they're like, that guy obviously loves food and possibly loves wine. Why not pair them up?
And I'm so looking forward to that. And then the people only have to wait an hour, and then they got Dan Russell.
It is a chock-a-block full of entertainment on Thursday nights.
Things are happening at Astral, and this is the happening station in this city right now.
The city is abuzz with all this new programming.
So who's going in Wednesday nights at 6?
It is another talk radio format.
Okay.
I believe it's called Experts on Call.
Okay, so it'll be a variety of different people taking calls, experts on in their various vertical markets.
Everything from strata to recovery, as in drug and alcohol recovery, things like that. It's an interesting listen.
Well, I'm looking forward to Thursday nights. Because I do love the Food and Wine Show, which ironically you produce.
Saves
you some time, so we can trade off. And from what I understand, the leftovers that are left in studio when those folks are in here, because they can't possibly consume everything that they cover, it's going to be good. It's going to be good for us.
Well, I got to say that Dan Russell's already laid claim on.
Well, he's going to be an hour late on Thursdays. He's going to be an hour late, but we do have one issue.
What's that?
The big issue is, what are we going to do with App Wednesday?
Well, we're obviously going to have to change the name.
We do.
Well,
do you think that people will accept that? I think we can still call it App Wednesday.
Well, we'll have to alter the name then.
No, I think we call it App Wednesday, and we just kind of, we're one of those unusual things. App Wednesday that happens on Thursday. I'm seriously considering it because it's really my call, isn't it?
Yeah, well, absolutely, it's your call. But then you realize that anyone who's not familiar with App Wednesday—I mean, obviously the fans who are there are going to stay regardless—but the new people, you'll confuse them if you call it App Wednesday. But it airs.
You just said we're Thursday nights at 7, the Seinfeld slot. That's the sort of thing Seinfeld would do. Is they would have kept the name.
That's true.
We might have to keep the name. I think we better move on to more serious topics. Let's talk about BlackBerry.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Nobody does it better. Except maybe you.
Joining me online now from Toronto is Jackie McNish, a senior writer with the Globe and Mail. And on this past weekend, they did a spectacular job illustrating the fall of BlackBerry, how the smartphone inventor failed to adapt. And Jackie, along with two of her colleagues, put together an article. It's getting a lot of response, is it, Jackie?
Yes, it's really one of those subjects, and timing is everything. We had been working on this story for almost a year, and we really accelerated when BlackBerry announced a few weeks ago that it was expecting close to a $1 billion write-down on its new phone that was expected to be a real competitor to the iPhone and to Android and wasn't. So we really accelerated things. And there are about five of us who ended up putting it all together at the end. And timing is everything in life. It really has gone viral globally. And interestingly enough, our data people tell us that majority of our readers are mobile, which tells us that the mobile reader is really prepared to go deep, because this was almost a 7,000-word story.
Yes, it took me a good part of Sunday. I think it was Sunday morning that I read through it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Very even-handed. If for all of our listeners, go to Globe and Mail, or just search Globe and Mail BlackBerry, and you will come up with this right at the top of the search results. But the interesting thing that I found is your chronology is up to almost weeks ago, as far as the mistakes that were being made and the missteps, the opportunities that BlackBerry has had to remain relevant, to really remain at the leading edge. And although the ship hasn't completely sailed, it's definitely warming up its engines and getting ready to leave harbor as far as the future of BlackBerry is concerned. Which of the themes that you guys followed, a whole series of themes kind of through looking at the original founders, looking at the current president, looking at each of the each of the directions that they wanted to take it. Which one did you follow closest yourself?
The thing that I think we were all most interested in was, how was it that this smartphone that we all loved when we had it, we felt such a strong attachment to it. I mean, I gave up using my BlackBerry as my primary smartphone just a few months ago because I loved the keyboard so much.
Yes.
And I didn't care about apps. I'm your nerd utilitarian kind of a person, so it suited me perfectly. And finally, one of my teenagers convinced me to look at his iPhone, and I became a convert pretty quickly because I realized how much they had missed. And what we wanted to try and understand was, how did this happen? How did this company that had everything, that was the smartphone kings, the phones that President Obama used, the Queen had, lots of folks, high-profile folks, just had to have deep attachment to it. How did it happen? And we pinpointed it to 2007, which is with the introduction of the iPhone. And it's explained really well in this story, in a moment when Mike Lazaridis, who's the original founder of BlackBerry, looking at this in 2007, they don't take it seriously. He takes it apart, looks inside it, and realizes that they've effectively put a Mac laptop inside a smartphone. And what the significance of that is that the BlackBerry, up until that moment, had provided us with partial access to the Internet. It had given us email, direct email access, and that was their great step forward. And what the iPhone did was that they gave you the entire Internet. You could browse easily, you could read documents, you could take photos, send them, engage on social media, and they moved light years ahead of BlackBerry. And the interesting thing about BlackBerry, it was a great competitor, but it fought against the Nokias and the Motorolas of the world at what was basically the same kind of phone. They were just better, smarter, more efficient, and safer, secure, which is why they had such a big audience in sort of the corporate and government world.
And this is, and if we look at, you look at the iPhone's introduction as the beginning of the demise, but even at that point, it seems from your story that they had several opportunities to still make a comeback. One was Bell Silly's idea and concept that they should convert over to a services company, much the same way as IBM did, and push BBM forward as a standard. Now, they would have slipped into the background as far as public profile is concerned, but they would have still been an incredibly profitable and very important part of the infrastructure for mobility had they done that.
Right. And I think that the interesting point here, it always comes, there's that wonderful book, The Innovator's Dilemma. I mean, while this was happening, while the iPhone suddenly arrived, and they recognized behind the scenes what a threat it was, for the next few years, the BlackBerry was, one of the fastest-selling phones in the world, and this is one of the fastest-growing companies in the world. It was extraordinary. So while they were experiencing this great success, they had to reinvent themselves, and there became this pull internally. Their core base was the enterprise base, the corporations, the governments. And they had this moment in 2000, and I believe it was 11, when they invited all the top CIOs of the Fortune 500 to Orlando for a session and to talk about how they were going to bring in, touchscreen apps, that sort of thing, cameras, games. And their clients said, no, we don't want this. We don't want our employees out there playing games on our servers or using phones. If you put those features on the phones, we'll block them on our servers. So the question was, do they cannibalize their base that was causing them to grow so much? Do they take that leap and chase and do something new? And that was the pull. And I think the extra layer of problems, if you will, within the organization was that you had two co-CEOs.
Mm.
Jim Balsillie, Mike Lazaridis, two totally different people that had successfully complemented each other despite their differences, as Mike focused on growth, you know, this rapid growth internationally. Excuse me, Jim focused on growth internationally, and Mike Lazaridis was in the lab coming up with new ideas with this enormous team. And what kept them together pulled them apart. Their differences that worked in the early days pulled them apart as there became more dissent about which way to go.
And that push and pull from the two co-founders really created an indecision. So they really didn't do well in either. You know, they really didn't. Neither camp managed to take control, which would have again possibly been the savior for the company, because had they, for instance, even with the release of the last BlackBerry, had they released the keyboard version first, maybe we wouldn't, you know, it still probably wouldn't be a rosy picture today, but it might not be in as desperate straits as they are now.
It's hard to say. You know, there's lots of theories about what they could have done differently. The reality is they were in a very tough spot. And you know, even Steve Jobs, I mean, he was fired from Apple, you know, shortly, you know, many years after he had founded it, because there had been failures. They had made mistakes. It happens really fast. The rush to judgment in the technology sector by consumers and by critics is enormous. It's unrelenting. And the other issue that I think really fascinated us here was the relationship that BlackBerry had with the carriers, the phone companies in the United States. iPhone went with AT&T and some others, locked out Verizon. Verizon wanted BlackBerry to create a category killer, and that was ended up being the Storm, which bombed.
Yes.
And so there was another opportunity missed. They just couldn't execute. They couldn't push it through the organization effectively and quickly enough. And then Verizon washed their hands of BlackBerry and moved on towards Android, which, as we now know, is in a real race with Apple and iPhones.
And despite all of this, BlackBerry's enterprise server, their back end, that is still the darling of the corporate IT manager. They still trust it. They still rely on it. They still want they desperately want BlackBerry to succeed and still be a player, because that is the best kind of the best security measure for keeping their data and their enterprise safe and secure.
Right, and that's what the chief information officers say, and that's what they think about, but the world has changed. Their clients, their lawyers, their investment bankers, they want the iPhone or the Android, whatever it is, because they want those bells and whistles. And so we're now seeing these platforms open up so that they can serve multiple kinds of smartphones or just devices, whether it's you know, your tablet or whatever. I think companies are now saying, we're not going to play God and decide which device you're going to use. We're going to provide a server. We're going to set certain boundaries. It's up to you.
So here we have another Canadian telecommunications company that was once sitting on top of the heap and now is sliding down the hill pretty fast. But still, while things happen fast, they're still in incredibly good shape cash-wise. They still have a solid install base. They still sell a lot of phones outside of the North American marketplace. They still have their security, they still have the preferred back-end security system. Do you think that there's still they can turn it around and still have a solid future?
I think the first thing they have to do is take this company private to get it out from underneath the brutal lens of the public markets, of the public critics. I think there are days for now as a handset competitor are pretty limited.
Yeah.
And so they're going to reinvent themselves. Will it be something that focuses on their enterprise services skills, on their great strength in terms of security? Perhaps it's encryption. Perhaps they'll team up with a major technology player. We do believe that Fairfax will succeed with its bid, or someone will. They're right now the lead contender, and from what we hear, there are a number of powerful financial institutions that are interested in joining that bid. And so that they can get out of the public eye, reinvent themselves, they're going to be much smaller, perhaps it'll be different leadership, and they'll be able to be quiet about it and take their time.
And we have seen technology companies step out of the consumer space and become very successful in the enterprise space, IBM probably being the greatest example. Is that the model that we should be looking at that?
Well,
ultimately?
That's a very good example. Louis Gestertner, who was the CEO, I mean, I remember when he stepped in, I mean, he was completely different than the whole IBM culture. And the whole IBM culture was so insular. You know, they had the IBM song, you dressed a certain way. It was like a little... you know, a little cult inside, mm-hmm. and this is what happens, the cult of success. And so they need to shake the company loose of that. and to think of themselves as a services company. And that was a brilliant strategy for IBM, and it was a gutsy one. I mean, they went from, you know, they were the mainframe, computing company, and they became the services company because they knew it. We've seen that with Xerox as well. They were a copier company. They became a services company quite successfully. So I think that would be a good one to think of. The question is, what will their services be?
Yes, and it is difficult to do that, as you say, in the public space, whether you have investors that are looking at every quarter exactly what your numbers are looking like.
Yeah.
So, Jackie, you guys did, as I say, you did a great job. All of our listeners should definitely be jumping online and reading this on their smartphones or on their computers at theglobeandmail.com. Jackie Wienisch is a senior writer there. Thanks so much for your time today, Jackie.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me from Toronto now is Ken Price. He's the Director of Marketing Mobile Communications at Samsung. And Ken, you guys have a whole bunch of new toys that are just hitting the streets as we speak.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks for the chance to chat with you today.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time for me. Now, you were in town earlier this week, and you were showing us the Samsung Galaxy smartwatch, which is, I imagine, what's on everybody's tongue right now. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the watch?
Sure. And so this is our first in a category of we hope will be an expanding line of wearable technology. And essentially, and it's called the Galaxy Gear, and it's essentially a companion to our flagship smartphones. So the Galaxy S 3 and 4 and the Note 2 and 3 will be supported on this device. And essentially, think of it as a companion, a way of getting notifications, to be able to make calls, to take quick snapshot pictures. It's actually quite fully featured when I think we've compared it to what people imagine they might want to use for this. And it's also capable of running special apps that have been built for it. So we're very excited. It's sporty looking, it's sleek and interesting, and we think it'll be of great interest to your listeners for sure.
And yet again, you folks are stepping into kind of the great mystery as far as an area that looks like it's going to be cool technology. Everybody thinks it's going to be cool, but nobody really has any idea yet how people are going to use it, do they?
Well, that's high tech for you, right?
Yeah.
Man? I mean, it's so cool, and I think this is one of those times where the industry is driving a lot of innovation, so Samsung is at the forefront of that, and our ability to sort of bring a Super AMOLED, screen to that size, and all of our understanding of componentry pays off at this point. And then to deliver that through our Galaxy experience, I think will be a real winner.
And this is the first of the real mainstream of the smartwatches. We've seen the startup Pebble Watch out there, which has gotten a nice foothold and shows that people have an appetite for an intelligent interface on their wrist. But your product it's really gone in a different direction because it as you say, it's a companion. It really requires one of your smartphones paired with it in order to see the fullness of what it can do for you.
Yeah, that's right. And I think what our observation was is the phones have gotten bigger and more fully featured. Some of those transactions are better, maybe better served by delivering them even closer to you, so they become more personal or intimate or more immediate. And those were the kinds of things. So taking a quick snapshot or video, recording a voice memo, counting your steps in a device that might tie to a health application. So our approach was, to your point, to make it much more fully featured to take advantage of all of the cool things that are going on in the smartphone now.
Now, have you been wearing one on your wrist for a while yourself?
I'm sorry?
Have you been wearing one yourself for like a...
I am.
Okay.
Yes,
now,
I have. I've been wearing it for a couple of weeks, and I've got to say that it's very easy to get used to and a very convenient way to... Especially I'm finding, notifications from social media, email, and texting. I've used the speakerphone function because there is, believe it or not, a mic and a speaker built right into the watch band itself that has really good pickup audio. So I'm finding I'm using that more than I thought I would.
Uh-huh.
And even the camera, absolutely. So.
And the camera's just
so far so good.
The camera's about a 2-megapixel camera that's built into the wristband part.
That's right.
Yeah.
It fits. So if you were to imagine, if you were to sort of hold your wrist up, in a very natural way, almost if you were checking the time on a watch, you had your hand in that position, and the actual lens is positioned where you can see the subject matter of either your picture or video. So it's a very natural movement, but one that you can make very immediately because just by lifting up the watch in that way, it has an accelerometer, wakes up the watch. You sort of, one quick swipe, hit a picture, So it captures that kind of snapshot in a couple of steps where that might take a little bit longer on a smartphone. So what that's able to do is, again, do something a little quicker and more conveniently, not to replace the high-quality cameras we're building in, you know, to products like the new Note 3 and so on, but it is a substitute for the quick snapshot for sure.
And that's the other product I wanted to talk about today, was the new Note 3. And I think that it's outstanding that you're releasing this particular product at the same time as you're releasing the phone, the watch. And the reason I say that is, when the Note was first released, now the Note is, for listeners that aren't aware, it's your mega-sized cell phone. It's a tiny tablet or a huge cell phone, depending on how you want to look at it.
Exactly.
And when it was first released, it was, again, a great idea that people thought we wanted, but we weren't sure how we were going to use. And so you folks, you'll forgive me for paraphrasing or for interpreting your marketing strategy, but it seems to me you almost put it out there and said, okay, here's this feature set. How are you going to use it to the user community? And they came back saying, we love it for this, but really it was limited in some ways and allowed you to address the ways it was limited. And so the new version of it is going to be kind of almost user tested to the point that it's become an entirely new product.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the winning parts of the insight were that you know, our belief that communicating is becoming more visual and less about just the phoning experience or just emailing and texting, that people want to do more and they want to see that on a bigger screen. And the whole trick is to be able to produce that in a way that's not inconvenient to carry around. So we address things in that regard. And you know, so now we're in two generations later and all of the hardware features are improved, as I'm sure you would expect. I think the other, you know, part of it was to say, you know, we're still, you know, notice that people carry multiple devices. One of those devices, quote unquote, is a pen and paper. And our other value proposition was around, you know, being able to take truly electronic notes. And now that we can integrate that more with other services like Evernote, and now that, you know, we've substantially improved the navigation for how you get at the utilities that take advantage of the pen. You know, and once again, it's a touch screen that you can use with your hands, but you don't really have to.
Yes.
And the third part, you know, I think that we said was that, you know, the pen, once you pick it up, if you choose to go that route, you shouldn't have to put it down. So the other, I think, big advantage of the Note 3 is that once you start to use the pen, you don't have to put the pen down to continue to use it in some way. So all of those things are you know, part of the proposition. In addition to the point that you raised right at the beginning, which is, it offers, you know, an industry-leading 5.7-inch Super AMOLED, you know, high-definition screen that really presents content in a way that only that kind of device could.
So, and that's what resonated with me when you were showing it to me earlier this week, was the fact that as you described the process, and we kind of glossed over it here, but in the past with the Note, if people were navigating and going through their day-to-day process, they would use the pen for certain precision or writing type tasks, then they would have to put it down for some navigation tasks, and then they'd have to pick the pen back up. Now you folks have changed the interface, and it's subtle, but it's profound, the fact that you can keep the pen in your hand at all times, navigate through the phone, you do all of the phone functions with the pen in hand, and that just changes, it just changes the environment so much that it becomes, to me, it makes it vastly more usable.
Yes, agreed. Some of the utilities that we had that were buried, you know, further in the programming and in the interface and things like that we brought forward, you know, the ability, you know, something that we first introduced with the Note 2 and the GS4 in terms of the air command, the hovering. So now that, you know, the device even understands when the pen is hovering over and can preview commands, including these air commands. And so we have sort of five useful utilities that pop up, you know, the press of a button. So all of these things that we've done to try to make the pen navigation even more viable for folks without having to interrupt that flow. So I think the combination of the powerful hardware and the large screen size that, you know, that's also used for the multi-window. I think that was another, I think, part of the feedback that you gave us was regarding, you know, the kind of user that would want this is somebody who's really, you know, taking their smartphone out for a ride and putting it through the same kind of expectations that we might have only reserved for, you know, computers in the past.
Well, and that concept of, you know, when I was thinking about the Note when I first saw it, I thought, this is going to be great because I can read books on it, I can use it for a lot more visual things, and I can use it for all the things I use my phone for. But this adding the stylus and the precision that it gives you, the control that it gives you, made me, for the first time when I was watching the Note 3 demo that you were giving this week, made me think, I could see using that for editing my website. in the field if I had to. I wouldn't be my first choice, but I wouldn't shy away from it the way I do. Like on my iPhone right now, it's got a tiny screen. I would hate the concept of going into, you know, a full browser mode and trying to, you know, navigate down to the kind of the small little control pieces that you need if you were doing a little bit of editing on your website. But with the combination of the stylus and that massive screen, I could say, oh yeah, I could do that. I could handle modifying something, fixing something that was broken, or, you know, or playing with something. And so for the first time, I was seeing the potential of doing that. And that's, I think, kind of one of the new horizons that this form factor might open up.
Absolutely. You know, and we were, you know, I think when we first launched the Note and said, you know, if you could only carry one device, and to your point, Steve, you know, I mean, and anytime you settle down to one that's an all-in-one, there's always going to be some kind of a compromise versus a specialized product for something. So you talked about editing a website, you know, could I do that on a big, huge 24-inch monitor back at the ranch? Sure, you could, but you can't carry that with you. So, you know, what is the one device that, you know, that would be indispensable and do virtually everything? And that's what we've aimed at with the Note, the whole Note family, and now this third generation product that's able to do that even more.
And
so
And now these products are into the pipeline now. What's the availability of both the Galaxy Gear and the Note 3? Yeah.
Yep. So our official Canadian launch, we've unpacked them in the world about a month ago, and now we're rolling them out to countries. So Canadians will see them on the 4th, which is just in a couple of days. Although I'll say the Gear is going to be kind of in limited availability for the first couple of weeks. The Note 3s should be in good availability across all carriers. So we're very excited about the launch.
And price points for the products?
So the on its own, the Galaxy Gear will retail for $329. We also do have an introductory offer, though, when you buy that with the Note 3 and put that on a plan, there'll be $100 savings for end users at this point. And we usually let the carrier sort of set the price, but you know, this is obviously a premium smartphone, and so customers would probably expect to see it positioned that way.
And so the Note 3 available in quantity starting in a couple of days. The Gear, if you're lucky enough to get one, jump on it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Ken Price is the Director of Marketing and Mobile Communications at Samsung. Thanks so much for your time, Ken. I know it was a rush today, but we appreciate you getting on with us.
No problem. Thanks for the opportunity. Thanks, Steve.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us.
Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
One of the cool things about the Vancouver area is the technology companies that come out of the woodwork. We have so many different great little companies in this area, and one of them is Two Tall Totems. I got Chris Hobbs here from Two Tall Totems, which you guys are development a basic. What do you call yourselves?
Two Tall Totems. We are a development house. Yes,
development house. So you develop apps and a variety of other things. And now you guys reached out to me with a couple of interesting stories. One of them was a product that you're developing for the education market, a collaborative tool for allowing teachers and students to work together on iPads, which is sharing screen, basically screen sharing technology, right?
All tablets, actually. Yes.
All tablets, okay. Mm-hmm. But you also, the reason that you caught my attention was you also floated the part of the funding of this project on Kickstarter.
Yes.
And so when you reached out, let's do the Kickstarter part first, and then we'll talk about the technology.
Sounds great.
So when you reached out to me, you guys were all excited because Kickstarter is going, and you wanted to get some word out there about Kickstarter, and you were going to raise billions of dollars. How's it gone for you?
Well, it's been a bit of a humbling experience because quite a few other people have been.
The humbling
experience in the tech world, as we all know. We have been supplanted by about, I'd say, 100 other Canadian companies that seem to be going in daily as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult. It's almost you turn into an SEO job trying to get back on top of the network. And it's something that we haven't been able to find a solution for yet.
So to kind of go back in the step back machine here, mm-hmm. Kickstarter is a crowdfunding platform that allows people to float an idea saying, I got a great idea for this sharing collaborative tool for the education marketplace. And if you give us some money, you'll get something in return. And it's basically a way you can fund it. And it can be everything from you can fund artistic ventures like theater or music or books or technology. So when you guys saw Kickstarter, and we've only been able to do Kickstarter in Canada for 3 months, 4 months?
One month, September 7th.
September 7th mm-hmm. it was. Okay, so a month.
Mm-hmm.
You've been able to do Kickstarter. So you guys were right at the front edge of and you got in right away?
Yeah. Well, we were going to go into the American Kickstarter, which was available to us, and we founded a company in the States. We went through all these steps. It took about 3 months to get all the media, everything ready. And as we're about to push publish, boom, Canadian Kickstarter is announced. So it didn't give a date. It didn't give us any information, but we just said, well, we should pause on this. We'd like to get part of the wave.
We're ready to go, yeah.
We're ready to go. Let's just be part of that wave. You know, there's tax issues with going through American companies anyhow. Mm-hmm. And so it just made a lot more sense. So we waited about 2 months, gingerly wanting to push that publish button every day. And it launched, and so did we the same day.
So you launched. So the idea behind Kickstarter is crowdfunding is a way that good ideas can be basically get access to funding without going through the nightmare of dealing with venture capitalists and all of the losing control of the company, because you're going to have a broad base of support, everybody giving a small amount of money, so the founders and the imaginations that form the company can still maintain leadership, and also hopefully use less of their cycles getting money and more of their cycles on continuing to develop your product.
Correct.
We all believe that. Has that been the case?
Well, I'd say it's been a challenging case for us. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to get the cynical perspective that Kickstarter, really, it is a way to see a product that you might want, and it's kind of be a first mover on a product, whereas we're trying to go with this great egalitarian, we're trying to put tablets into schools, we're going to be doing it for free, we just wanted help to get that push in, and I don't think people are as interested, and they're not putting a little toy in their pocket, to be honest, and I think that's been a challenge for us.
And that, you actually talked about that, I think one of the kind of the magics of a product like Kickstarter for me is the fact that everybody who invests in it becomes one of your ambassadors.
Yes.
And that's where the success comes from.
Yes.
You know, when we see things like the Pebble Watch, which mm-hmm. is a prime example. It's a gadget that people wanted, everybody was interested in, it had a great price point, mm-hmm. It told a good story, and it was a massive success.
Yes.
So, but it was something that I wanted or you wanted on your wrist.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have that advantage because your tool is you're trying to get into school, so it basically raises the caliber of education in whatever districts or whatever schools that it
Correct.
Goes in. But there's not a lot of profit there. There's not a lot of fun for the person who's, you know, there's satisfaction. Mm-hmm. You're selling satisfaction, and it's not a popular product to sell.
That would be correct.
So will you share some numbers? What were you trying to raise?
We were trying to raise $50,000, which is actually a pretty small number.
On Kickstarter, yeah.
Very small number.
It's a very reasonable dollar value. Mm-hmm. And then what were you giving me? How much money did you want me to give you, and what were you giving me for that money?
Well, you have multi-tiered approaches.
Yeah.
And what we were giving is people the ability to be beta testers with the software, so they'd actually be able to use the software first and foremost, as well as access to it in their schools. Now, this is where it actually got a little bit of a challenge, because you cannot do any donations by Kickstarter's rules. So we wanted to say, okay, if you pay X, then you can put X amount of this product in schools. And Kickstarter said, no, that's a red flag.
Oh.
So really, these are a couple of tripping points that we've come across with trying to be, again, these good company trying to put, you know, trying to push education, and it doesn't really fit their mold of what they're doing.
Now, we're going to talk about the product again in mm-hmm. a minute. We'll talk about it. But what the heck are you doing trying to put a product into schools for free? Where's the profit in it for you guys?
Well, I think we'd have to talk about the product a little bit to really understand that.
Okay.
But there's of course, you know, the freemium model.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was getting it in and then getting it engaged.
Yes.
Finding use cases and then building some revenue on it later.
Correct.
Because you and your company are not just all about philanthropy.
No.
You actually do want to make money with it somewhere down the line.
Correct. But we recognize this is a noble goal and somewhere we want to be.
Well, and education is a space that you're not going to go into if you're just looking at money. That's for sure. So we might return back to the Kickstarter story in a minute. Maybe we'll close things off with you offering sage advice to other investors, other people thinking about floating their products online.
Sure.
But let's talk about your product itself. It's called Think Together.
Think Together is a we call it a multi-layered collaboration approach that we've we've actually patented. And what it does is it gives everyone, we call it democratizing collaboration. So where normally you would go and it's a flat plane, everyone would, you know, you go over top of a document and you'd, maybe you could circle it or highlight it or something like that. And everyone would be on the same scale. But with our approach, everyone has their own layer. So if you do a circle.
Okay, so let's take a step back.
Take
just
a step
a second.
Back.
So we're talking about in a classroom environment, yes, having multiple tablets in the students' hands.
Yes.
So when you're doing collaborative work then, in the kind of the standard model, mm-hmm, everybody is working on the same plane of a document. So if somebody draws a circle, it's on the page. Another person could erase that circle. It's like if you've been in a GoToMeeting doc sort of thing where,
exactly,
you're all working on the same screen.
Exactly.
So you've got that, and that's great collaboration. Mm-hmm. But now you're trying to up the game by saying, okay, no, we're going to have different layers that can be enabled or disabled, mm-hmm, so that we can basically layer things on top and create more of a dialogue, more collaboration that way.
That's correct, because we think everyone should have a voice, mm-hmm, and that's in education. It's also in the workplace. There's always that one bulldog that seems to will take over a meeting, mm-hmm, and this allows someone to actually start marking up a document, a website, a video, any form of media, and you can go to that person's view and go, wow, that's interesting. Can you tell me about what you're doing? Now, the thing that's interesting about our product is also it captures everything that you're doing, the words, the markups, and then you can replay that later. So you can actually relive the class, and that's where the real power is in this. It also works remotely. So if the teacher or if the student's sick, or if you want to take a class, say in Beijing, you can actually do that and have be part of the class, hear what the teacher's saying, hear what the class is saying, and it's as if you're actively engaged in that class.
Okay, so this is fairly. It's a fairly robust piece of technology then. So it's, mm-hmm, is it server based? What does it look like as far as the architecture goes?
Well, there's we actually wrote our own communication layer because there is nothing like this.
Okay.
This is a product of about a year and a half of work with two teletones. And we pride ourselves on our advanced nerd knowledge. And there is a server based version. So there's a cloud based version or there's a remote version. For example, the one that we're doing right here in your studio is just a local. It's running off my phone.
Okay. Oh, really? So now the in front of me here is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tablets,
yep,
6 tablets,
mm-hmm,
and a drawing of Albert Einstein, which each, am I to assume that now, are these all different OSs, these tablets, or are they all
nope,
the same?
These are all iOS 7.
iOS,
yeah.
iOS tablets.
Oh, that one's an iOS 6, pardon me.
Okay, so it's all iOS, and so, but as you are manipulating the image on your iPad, I'm seeing the manipulation happen on all of the iPads identically at the exact same time.
That is correct. Now, you also have your own layer,
as
you can see here.
And so I'm playing with them. So we've just popped up a window on the screen that gives me access to a layer.
Yeah.
So basically now we can all just work on this document, and it's got illustration tools. It's got markup tools as, mm-hmm, far as drawing different color pens.
Yeah.
I could probably type in text if I
have a text
layer.
Yeah, it's got a note tool. Yep.
And it's also recording the audio, though.
That's correct.
Okay, so then how does a teacher then use this afterwards? Like this is so during the course you're capturing all this information. This is all, is there a management system that allows her to see each, or him or her to see all of the students and look at a timeline of their interaction through the piece?
Yep, you can relive any class, and you can actually, it's not a video, it's what we call a dynamic event. So actually when you're reliving the event, or reliving the class, you can still actively select which layer to see. So say your friend, I had a friend, Costas, in school. Hi, Costas. Everyone wanted his notes. You'd actually be able to dynamically just point to Costas' notes and only see Costas' notes if you wanted to.
What level of education do you see this being implemented in the first iteration?
Well, this is a read to learn instead of a learn to read sort of situation. So I think grade 5 plus, though there's definitely the ability, you know, if you want to work on your letters, you want to work on even language, anything like that. It's really just for collaboration. Pretty much anywhere globally.
Have you had conversation with any of the local school boards that are implementing iPads or tablets?
We have and we haven't. We have been speaking to actually a couple of schools in the States. We've spoken to a few universities in Mexico who are very, very interested. We haven't really launched the product. We actually just got the patents recently, so we haven't even spoken too openly about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and the other thing is, why education for the first venture for this? I look at this and I say, this is great meeting technology. You know, as a layer on top of a GoToMeeting or even embedded in a Skype stream. It would be awesome.
That is one of our goals, and actually one of the big wigs in our company is ex-Microsoft, actually two of them, who have been speaking about such a thing. Okay. We think David and I, co-founder, twin brother David,
yes.
We have young children who are in school, and we had that kind of low-hanging fruit trying to decide where we should put this technology, and education came out of it. Because it's actually kind of interesting. When we had it as a prototype, it was so much fun to show because everyone saw it as their own way of how they can interact with the technology, and it was exciting. It was really interesting. But then when it became an education app, people were like, oh, that's an interesting education app. Yes. I kind of missed that romantic time of showing it and people thinking, how can I use that in my own ways?
Well, the fact that you're cross-platform is going to make it is going to be quite intriguing, because we see everybody from Apple to Samsung making a race to put their tablets into the school system. So we're going to see a bit of a divide in most school districts between the Android tablets and the iOS ones.
And we think that's really important, actually, because we also want students to bring their own devices in, just yes. like how they do in their own office. So we've actually figured out a way, and this is, again, some serious nerd math, and we think we might be the only people in the world that are actually capable of doing this or have done this in tests so far, is we can actually have an Android tablet or a Windows tablet and an iOS tablet speaking to each other without going through a server. It can actually do it just using a remote network.
That is cool.
Or a local network, pardon me. That's pretty unique.
Yeah. Think of it, even for things like conferences and stuff, that could be really quite compelling.
Yes.
Okay. How soon do you think we'll see the first field trials of the technology?
Well, we've actually trialed it already in a couple of schools. So one out in Surrey, which was fantastic. They were great, and mm-hmm. it was incredibly successful. We did that with 35 iPads with the Apple TV working too, and it worked beautifully. We learned a lot from it. Now we're just working on the remote side of it, but we should be launching pretty soon, to be honest.
And so you'll have to let us know when you actually have it in the school, and we can talk to the teacher about how it's
that would be great.
How it's been implemented. So I want to go take a step back now and,
sure.
and talk one more time about Kickstarter, because I'm so fascinated.
Mm-hmm.
So now, since you're a 1 month veteran of Canadian Kickstarter, you're a grizzled veteran,
yes.
And you're already jaded.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you're already jaded. How much? Because we can look online. It's probably how much money did you raise?
Oh, it was like 3% of what we were looking for.
Yeah. Oh, 3%, which
yeah.
is, and you have to raise.
You have to raise
nickel,
the minimum, yep.
or it doesn't happen. So yours, and it has your cycle finished.
Defined cycle finished. Sorry. Yeah,
offer done?
We have another week to go.
You have another week to go, but mm-hmm. you aren't going to make it. Even with the massive publicity of Dottotech.
I was saying Dottotech is going to be pushing us over the line.
We're not going to come through for you.
Try.
If you're sitting at 3%, we're not going to step up to 97%. Art, do you have $47,000 sitting in your jeans?
I'm close. I've got about $40.
Okay, which is not going to this particular venture.
Sounds like I need gas money.
So if your buddies are sitting around talking, saying, well, where does Kickstarter work? Who's it going to work for? Who's it, you know, if we wanted to get involved, where is it going to fit?
You know, I think it's for a product that you can to be truly selfish and be, I'm a first mover on this product, and I really want that, and I'll support that.
So the Pebble Watch type thing, that's
exactly.
ideal. What about, do you have any sense of how it fits into the art space or for music or
well,
any of those other things
think,
as a result?
You know, it's kind of interesting because it seems like it's the people who've already succeeded are succeeding in Kickstarter with the arts and the music. You know, with that said, Kickstarter, I think their original mission was for the arts and music scene.
And I think of books.
But
if you've already got a track record,
so
you've got a user base that will come back to you again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's like everything else, success breeds success.
It does, and I think that's going to haunt the site, actually, or haunt the service.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like eBay, you know, when it got taken over by all of the, it was great when it was a real an exercise in you know garage democracy,
but
now it's been taken over by the merchants, and it's nowhere near as fun and engaging. So there you go. So okay, well listen, I'm sorry that you only got 3% of the money.
Well, we're still going to succeed with our mission of helping out schools, and we're actually talking to a lot of very interested people in this technology.
Now,
so.
Do you have information about Think Together on your website on Two Tall Totems, or where can people go to look up for information on it?
Well, you can actually go to our we've rolled it out of the company. It's called TTT Labs.
Okay.
Two Tall Totems Labs, so tttlabs.com.
Okay.
That will have the information all about the project.
We will make sure that we put up a link for that. So thanks
Beautiful.
So much to you and your brother who's been sitting quietly by because he's feeling a little bit under the weather.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks. This is Chris Hobbs from Two Tall Totems.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
So I'm not really surprised that the Kickstarter thing was less than promised. Are you?
I watched their video while you guys were talking, and it is... I think maybe it's maybe 2 or 3 years ahead of its time, but it's going to be the future for sure.
Their product or Kickstarter?
Well, both.
They're both pretty compelling, and I loved the conversation with BlackBerry. I thought that, as I mentioned probably several times, when you get home tonight, pop up with the old notebook or smartphone or tablet and do a search on Globe and Mail. Read that story on BlackBerry. It is illuminating, and it really covers all the different facets of what went on there. It was pretty good,
technology Canadiana.
It is.
We should know.
Well, it is. We should know about it. We should absolutely know about it. And this is it. This is it for Wednesday night. I'm feeling semi-nostalgic.
Don't.
Well, no. It's been 2 years, 3 years of our, better part of 3 years. We're over 2 years. Wednesday nights at 6.
It's not at the end of an era. We're just
moving. No, it's the beginning. It's going to get better.
Yes.
It's going to get better.
We're leaving our starter home and going into the home we're going to create.
Yeah, Thursday night, 7 o'clock. So don't panic next Wednesday when you're driving home and there's no Dotto Tech on the radio at 6. Don't pull over to the side of the road and phone the station in a panic because we're there the next night.
Thursday
nights at 7, Dotto Tech.
It's got a ring to it.
It's got a ring. It's going to take me a little while. Change is difficult. I'm over 50. Change is difficult for me.
Changing is difficult for you, too, after over 50.
Shush. unfortunately, the new time slot does not come with a new sidekick. Oh, well. Well, at least you'll often be in a much better mood after doing the Food and Wine show with all of the spirits flowing.
I probably won't remember most of the shows.
Yeah. Couldn't be worse. Thanks so much for all of the guests for tuning in. And looking forward to seeing you again next Thursday night. I have an 8-day break. I look at it this way. I've got an 8-day week now. I got an extra day off.
There you go.
Thursday night, 7 p.m. for more Dotto Tech. I'm Steve Dotto on behalf of Art Factor. All my guests, will see you next week.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.